The Big Picture, brought to you by Bible Society Australia, shining the light of God's Word into every corner of your world. And Sydney's Hope 103.2, there's always hope. The Big Picture, a Christian insight on the world of film, television and popular culture, with magazine editor Ben McKechin and scriptwriter Mark Hadley.
Hello, I am Ben McKechin.
And I'm Mark Hadley, and welcome to The Big Picture for Monday, March 30. And coming up in today's show, we delve into the wacky world of sitcom television and wonder what we laugh about tells us about ourselves.
Taking a look at Netflix and the explosion of the streaming offerings that are happening on the internets right at this moment.
The internets. I love the interwebs. And also, we tell you what the kids are watching and the latest American comedy, courtesy of the survivor of the Friends franchise.
Well, welcome back to The Big Picture for this week beginning March 30. Mark, nice to see you.
It's always good to be here in this particular shirt.
You're looking great.
Well, I like to spruce up for the show.
Now, we're going to kick off today with Now Showing and what's on TV. And you want to tell us a bit about this program called Stop Laughing, This Is Serious. Now, as far as I understand, this is a show that's trying to encapsulate the history of Australian comedy. It's on ABC. It's a three-part series happening on Wednesdays at 9 o'clock. It's featuring interviews with Australia's greatest comedians, past and present.
Well, we've got a great lineup of hilarious people today, folks.
Kel, come and watch this show. It's a fascinating documentary about Australian comedy.
Stop laughing. This is serious.
In Australia, we love our comedy.
You look like a big fat gypsy. Thanks, Mum.
And it's now some of the best in the world.
I want to dance like a white man.
It's more diverse than ever before. But where have our comedic voices come from?
I said pep, I said love.
In this series, we chart the story of Australian comedy and celebrate the men and women who make us laugh.
Oh, you've run over a greenie!
Stop Laughing, This Is Serious is basically that in a nutshell. The title tells you everything you need to know about the program.
Okay, so we shouldn't watch it.
We should do. Right. Just go and enjoy. Basically, it's looking into the history of Australian comedy and saying, you know, we've used comedy for the longest time, not just to make ourselves laugh, but to make ourselves think. You know, so Stop Laughing, It's Serious. And this three-part series on Wednesdays, 9 p.m. on the ABC, features basically all of the greatest Australian comedians of history. They've done a brilliant job of really going through and picking up everybody from Barry Humphries through to, you know, current stars and stuff. In fact, there's brilliant historical moments. You know, we see where characters like Norman Gunston. Now, I say Norman Gunston, I know that kind of half the audience is listening going, oh, yeah, Norman Gunston, how cool is that? And the other people are going,
scratching their head, what? Trying to search in Google at the moment.
But if you can imagine this, Norman Gunston was a made-up Australian television journalist, long before the Sin 30 report had a
long
go.
Long before Borat.
Yeah, before people started pretending to do journalism as comedy. Norman Gunston was this pretending Australian journalist, and he was there at the dismissal, you know, interviewing Gough Whitlam. And this is part of our history. When a comedian actually inserts himself at that point, you see how seriously we take comedy in Australia.
Now, the clip that we just played was alluding to what is going to come up in these shows, and it seems like it's getting to this point of suggesting to us what actually is Australian comedy. So do we learn from these shows what Australian humour actually is?
Yeah, that's the whole idea, is to try and understand ourselves. And basically, I think underneath it all, they say that Australian comedy is a subversive thing. The idea is it's basically those are the rebels and the people who like to chip away at the monolith of society. Andrew Denton says all the greatest comedians everywhere have a red hot kernel of anger somewhere, and that comes out of the program that they're angry about something, they're mocking something. And to me, you know, this laser beam of satire that gets referred to in the program is a really interesting thing, because comedy is that great equalizer. You know, it doesn't really matter. Ever since Charlie Chaplin, we've understood that doesn't really matter if you're the littlest guy in the street, you can still laugh at the biggest guy if he's got something to laugh about.
It sounds like you really like these programs, but aren't we sort of sapping the funny out of comedy just by talking about it? You know, like, isn't comedy meant to be all about just stop, turn your brain off and start laughing? So even us discussing the joke, aren't we ruining the joke?
You're right. Actually, I am a killjoy. It's right.
That was a thinly veiled reference to you being a killjoy, Mark. Yes.
Well, look, what I want to say is that when we laugh at something, we actually you know, position something as humorous, okay? That tells us something about ourselves. And so, yeah, you want to sit back in front of the telly and you want to relax and enjoy this. And this is great comedy and great entertainment at the same time. But at the same time, it tells us something about ourselves. You know, when we laugh, we say something is ridiculous. Now, Australians particularly think that authority is ridiculous.
Does that come through in this show?
Very much so. Yeah. You know, we don't like anybody who says that they can say how life should be or how we should be. And that's an interesting thing, because if we're a nation of people who don't want to be told, then, you know, that puts us in a curious position, at least as far as Christianity is concerned. If we laugh at everything that is an authority figure, well, God's not low on the list.
Yeah. I've been bringing that in. Authority figures, the Bible is taken as an authority figure in a lot of Christians' lives. Is the Bible a joke book? Like, is there any jokes in the Bible? So can we just mock it?
Ask Will Anderson. I actually think that there are plenty of comedians who do think that the Bible is probably the original joke book, but not for the reasons that I might say it is. I think the Bible's full of jokes. You look at Jesus.
Really?
Yeah, seriously. The gospel has actually got classic cases where Jesus is talking about, like, the plank in the eye, these guys wandering around not being able, trying to get a speck out of somebody else's eye while they've got a beam in their own. I mean, that is slapstick comedy.
Yeah, that's pretty funny stuff. Yeah.
I know. Well, thank you.
Jesus.
What we're lacking, actually, is when we look at it, is we're looking at words on a page. We're almost looking at a script, and so you don't really get the sense of how it must have been when Jesus was delivering that line. But what he's actually saying is that, you know, the big thing that humours God, so to speak, is pretense, that we actually pretend we're one thing when we're actually another. You know, and there are plenty of spaces in the Bible that talks about this idea of the hypocrites that make God laugh, or the fools that make God laugh. And I don't think this is a bitter laugh, like God going, you'll get yours, but more that this is ridiculous to think that you're in charge when you're not. Yeah, anyone who's ever seen a child giving orders around a house realizes how silly that must seem to someone who's actually in control.
So all these thoughts about authority, Bible, Jesus, funny, all came from watching Stop Laughing, This Is Serious, the three-part show on ABC?
No, they came from the 5 minutes of me thinking afterwards.
Right.
To be honest, this program will take you as far as to say that we should be thinking about our comedy, because our comedy does do more than just amuse us. But once you've got to that point, well, I really want to ask you, what are you laughing at? And I think that's worth thinking about. Well, actually, coming up next in the show, we're going to be talking about one of the great sort of trends in television today, and for that matter, in film and everything video-like, and that is the intersection with the internet. Television and film piracy, for example, has become so prolific that in one sense, it's been normalised. It's not unusual for some mild-mannered grandmother or aunt or someone to wander up to you and say, oh, I've just burnt a DVD off for the kids to have a look at something I found on the net. Who hasn't been in that situation? And yet, at the same time, it's a morally confusing one, okay, because grandma doesn't understand that she's just basically committed a, you know, $50,000 fine or something like that.
Or maybe she does.
Or maybe she, that mastermind of criminal piracy, grandma. Okay, but it is a crime, but it doesn't feel like a crime, because the internet has been associated with free content for so long that it feels like it shouldn't be wrong to sort of share something. And add to that, US studies have actually found that people don't feel like they're committing piracy or don't even want to commit piracy if they're given the opportunity to actually buy something at a right price and quickly. Mostly it's because people just want to watch television. And honestly, that's what it's about. I just want to watch it when I want to watch it. And that's how Australians feel. We're very relaxed about the illegal download. In fact, last year's most downloaded program was downloaded most by Australians. We are the, we're the capital of the world pirate. Okay, but that said, you know, we were a country based on convicts, so let's face it, you know, we're probably just carrying it into the 21st century. So the most pirated program in the world was The Game of Thrones, and this is a bit we pirated.
Lannister. Baratheon. Stark. Tyrell. They're all just spokes on a wheel. This one's on top, then that one's on top, and on it spins, crushing those on the ground. I'm not going to stop the wheel. I'm going to break the wheel.
No, I'd be clear, we actually do have a license to.
I'm glad you jumped in there. I was about to add, we did not pirate that.
This is not pirated. You may have pirated, not us. But anyway, what film and television is battling with is this idea of piracy and the fact that people want stuff now, but maybe the industry has finally caught up with people's desires. Is piracy going to be a thing of the past? Ben, have we reached that age?
No. because people will still do the wrong thing. However, slightly yes, because we're in a position now here in Australia where you no longer have the excuse that you used to have about, oh, I don't have access to this, or I want this right now and I can't get it, so how else am I going to get it? As you said in the intro, there's so many streaming services on offer now in Australia. It's actually happened. It's here. Netflix has been the big news that's happened in the last week or so.
Crash down of Netflix. I mean, people have been waiting this for years in Australia.
Yeah, I know. I think up to about 200,000 people in Australia, I think at least that is known of, broke all the geo-blocking codes that were going on so they could get to Netflix in the States before Netflix officially turned up in Australia. For anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, basically what we're talking about is on-demand video services that are provided by companies like Netflix, and there's been Presto and Stan that have been advertising like mad things in the last couple of weeks to get here before Netflix arrived. But basically what they're offering are these enormous libraries of TV and movies that you can stream for a fee of between so like $8.99 and $14.99 a month, something like that. So that's what's happening at the moment on the small screen around Australia.
What does it say about us, Dak, this proliferation of net-based TV and film?
It says that we want stuff when we want it all the time. We want it right now. And now we've got the ability to do that, which on the one hand is really good. Although, have you signed up for anything Netflix that you don't have to mention which one?
No. Look, as part of, I mean, this is a perk of the industry, but as part of, as being a TV reviewer, I often have a lot of these sort of services basically because I'm trying to evaluate them or I'm trying to actually get stuff. So, Sony TV, there are other ones that sit behind, maybe the product-based ones, Sony, Samsung. Samsung has their own channel. You've also got, I'm trying to remember, Quickflix.
Yeah, so, and not to forget all the free-to-air, quote-unquote, stations that have also provided on-demand services for a while now. But where I was going to with asking you whether you're using one, it's just I haven't signed up yet because they're really annoying. All Netflix, Presto, and Stan, you actually have to sign up before you know exactly what they've got to offer you in their catalogs. I'm finding that quite frustrating. But to answer your question, yes, we just want to consume, I think, is the main factor of what Netflix, Presto, Stan, all of these services are tapping into deep inside our core. We just want it and we want it now.
I got to ask, for one, maybe I've got the smallest excuse because I do this sort of stuff for a living, but is there a limit to how much we can actually consume?
There is, because we're people and there's only so much that we can watch. There's only 24 hours in a day. No one's made a longer day. Also, like for Netflix, for example, there's a smaller catalog on Netflix in Australia than there is on the American site. So there is a limitation to it. But no, on the other hand, binge watching has become such a massive thing for beyond, it used to be years ago, just people like ourselves that were paid to binge watch were binge watching. Now binge watching is this term.
We hurt ourselves for you people.
That's right. We took it for the team previously and now everyone's on the team and people are doing this all the time. So no, I don't think there are really any limits to what we can take in. And as much as we can kind of jump straight to the negative on that and start trying to point fingers at people and say, oh, you're being greedy and you're being materialistic and you're over, you're just trying to get everything you can at the same time. I think this is a good opportunity to start talking more on the positive in terms of self-control. Let's like bring back self-control. Let's think about how great it is to be self-controlled, that there's something about exercising restraint in what you do that could be remarkably beneficial for the balance across your whole life. So as Netflix and all that sort of stuff starts taking off, I'm going to try to bring back self-control, Mark.
I actually think it's a good thing because there's nothing that doesn't benefit from moderation. You know, like there is nothing, or to put it another way, there is no benefit taking anything in excess. And it wouldn't matter if it was, you know, oxygen. You know, too much of anything is actually going to hurt you. But look, could there be a benefit for us as Christians? Could we actually see, let's find something other than an opportunity to exercise self-control, though I think that's great. You go ahead. Is there any benefit for us in this pay-per-view world?
Oh, sure. Like, you know, Christians is people too. And so they love the binge watching. And so one of the benefits is they get to binge watch. It's great. Also,
finally, I know what I'm doing with my Saturdays.
Well, also, actually. I've been really disappointed at the amount of Christians I've spoken with that have pirated stuff over the years and just explained it away as if it's not a crime, but it is. But now you actually don't have that excuse. You do not need to pirate. Sure, there'll be some things that you still can't get your hands on, but go back to the bit about self-control, restraint, and it's a crime. But with all of these streaming services, Christians and everyone do not have these excuses anymore of, oh, I need to pirate it because it's cheaper and I want it right now. But I think also...
Can I just say it's an absolute pleasure to not be the curmudgeon for once in a program? Anyway, go ahead.
But I just wanted to end it more on a positive point. It's great for the sermon. All of these catalogs of TV and movies that are being offered by the streaming services and the on-demand sites on our interweb providers, all of that is pointing towards you can make choices yourself. So you no longer do you have to just pick up whatever's on TV at the time. You can go and make wise choices yourself. So what you put before your eyes, you can decide. How much you can watch of it, you can decide. I think that's a great thing in terms of thinking through the choices that you're making, which is what we're all on about here at The Big Picture.
Well, in today's show, we're actually going to be talking a lot about comedy. So we've had a bit already about Stop Laughing, This Is Serious. There are other things coming up in the show well worth looking at, particularly Stay In for the Odd Couple.
It's quite the TV show that we've got going on this week.
Well, I like to feel that TV is, you know, the little sister often ignored at the dance when we talk about shows like this, because films get such publicity.
Poor TV.
Poor TV.
Oh,
but
in
you
the
know
corner
what?
Again.
TV's always there. TV's the reliable date. TV's the one you can call up when film says, no, I don't feel like showing you anything good tonight.
But back to comedy.
Instead of trying to do it, how about we actually talk about it?
Yeah.
So growing up in Australia, it seemed to me that one of the great unifying factors was coming to school, the Monday morning or the next day and asking everyone if they'd seen the same comedy show you watched the night before. And then what would actually generally happen would be repeating ad nauseum the lines, the one line that everybody found.
Oh, man, did I talk about The Simpsons like you would not believe at university.
And in fact, there's actually a theory about males and comedy, where in which that men actually can distill comedy down to two or three words, which they say to each other, which references like an entire production or something. I don't think that's true, but maybe. Well, when we were sort of looking at these jokes over and over again, we started to realize that it would make a great opportunity for soundtrack this week. Now, soundtracks, when we look at the sounds that sit behind, the programs, and it's a great way of actually thinking about what a program actually gives to you. So in soundtrack today, we're going to do a little test, or more to the point, I'm going to test Ben. You can listen along, play as well, but you don't feel bad because if Ben fails, we all know that you knew. Okay, so how many of the following five sitcom soundtracks can you name, Ben? Here we go. Sometimes you wanna go where everybody knows your name, and they're always glad you came. You wanna be where you can see, our troubles are all the same. Yeah, I realise I shouldn't have given you that last second because you're sitting there watching the confusion going, I think I know that one,
The looks of puzzlement on my face.
There are five of them in there.
So the first one was Friends and the second one was Cheers.
Yeah, that's easy.
And then I'm having a mental blank on the third one. The fourth one is probably something like Dad's Army or what's that American?
Dad's Army.
I better pass on. It's an army show.
By the way, Dad's Army was British, but we'll just leave you
there. Yeah, okay. Obviously, I don't know. And the fifth one is Parks and Recreation. But the third and fourth ones have got me a little bit flummoxed.
Obviously, one of the huge, comedies of the last couple of years, Community. Fantastic.
Which theme was that?
Well, the third one.
Yeah?
Yeah. I can't sing it for you.
No. Let's know. Okay.
And
no.
That bit of instrumental right in the middle. I mean, there are people my age who are just going, Ben! Monty Python's Flying Circus.
Oh, Dad's Army. Yes. Oh, yes.
Okay. Well, we'll be back in the show a little later.
Oh, that's I just passed. I just passed.
Just
that
passed.
Was 60%.
You got 3 out of 5. Well done. We'll be back in the show with another attempt for you to sort of up the ante on that one. In this week, we're also going to be talking about what the Bible has to say about things. We introduced last couple of weeks, a great new segment with Greg Clark from the Bible Society. In the coming weeks, Australian society will be pausing to commemorate two public holidays, Easter and Anzac Day. And they're events that both call to mind what love dares to do. Particularly, I think people focus more on Anzac Day than they do on Easter these days. But Bible Society Australia's CEO and social commentator Greg Clark is back to consider what the Bible has to say about that key idea, sacrifice.
Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. That's from the Gospel of John, chapter 15, verse 13, in the King James Version. Well, the most celebrated social teaching of both Judaism and Christianity is, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. It's sometimes referred to as the Golden Rule. But this can be confusing because many religions and philosophies have a concept of reciprocity, that is, returning kindness to others, or two-way relationships, or thinking beyond oneself. In fact, all communities depend on such a concept, be they families, churches, sports clubs, or even orchestras. Take, for instance, the ancient Greeks, who taught that you shouldn't do ill to your neighbour. Or Confucius, who taught that we should not impose burdens on others that we ourselves wouldn't carry. But Jesus took things further. The Christian command, the one that Jesus teaches in Matthew chapter 6 and elsewhere, makes more demands on us than any other faith. Jesus and the apostles stretch the love thy neighbour command in a number of challenging directions. We are to love our enemies. We're to turn the other cheek when confronted. We're to give people the coats off our backs, to consider others better than ourselves, to treat inferiors as superiors. These are all New Testament teachings. Husbands are even to lay down their lives for their wives, according to the New Testament. How rarely is that lived out in contemporary married life? Usually the reverse is the case. Australians in general seem to like the Golden Rule. Being roughly Christian, we scratch the other cheek, as our great poet Liz Murray once wrote. But we can also get it completely wrong and let our selfishness shine through. I remember seeing a book in the Australian War Museum shop in Canberra with the incredible title, Do Unto Others, Counter-Bombardment in Australia's Military Campaigns. Either the author is destined for a career in comedy, or he has gotten completely the wrong end of the rifle when it comes to understanding the gist of Jesus' commandment. The Golden Rule Jesus style is extraordinarily difficult to live. It requires constant attention to the needs of others, resisting the narcissistic urge to see the world through our own eyes first and foremost. It asks of us to think of the very best way we might hope to be treated, and then to file that under unimportant and non-urgent for ourselves, but important, urgent, and essential for all of those around us. Let's not pretend this is an easy request, but it is a holy one. Easter is the ultimate expression of the Christian version of the Golden Rule. Funnily enough, we Aussies recognise this on Anzac Day, when we read the famous verse from the Gospel of John at the ceremony that marks the sacrifice made by soldiers for their country. Greater love has no one than laying down their lives for their friends. This inspiring verse, spoken by Jesus to his disciples before his crucifixion, is perhaps the high watermark of all religion. Human beings made the ultimate sacrifice for the sake of their friends, their family, and their nation. Jesus made the ultimate sacrifice for their sake, for mine, and for yours. May both your Easter and your Anzac Day be wonderful commemorations of this enduring truth.
That's Greg Clark from Australian Bible Society.
Thanks, Greg. Now, we're going back into the world of TV after... That's great to talk about Easter and themes of Easter and Easter week. It's fantastic, but... We're putting that to one side again.
Thanks.
Thank you. And now going on to press record for this week, which we're doing something a little bit different in our press record segment. Now, for regular listeners of The Big Picture, they'll know that press record is where we hear from you, the people out there, about what you think about movies and TV. Well, we've got a special guest with us this week on
My
press record.
My mum loves this segment.
She does?
She does.
Good. She's going to love it, particularly this week, because we've got Adrian Drayton with us. Now, Adrian, he's a communications and marketing manager for the Uniting Church in New South Wales and ACT. That's a grand title for a bloke who also has been a long-standing TV and film reviewer. He's reviewed for Hope. He's reviewed for Insights magazine. He also founded the terrific Real Dialogue Ministry. Now, the reason I was talking to him this week is because as we were talking about all the stuff about streaming and on-demand video services, et cetera, et cetera, I knew that Adrian was a massive fan of House of Cards, so much so that he's watched House of Cards season 3. He's already seen episodes of that that have emerged on Netflix. And for anyone who doesn't know, Netflix actually stumped up money for its own show, as in Netflix was so big that it put money into creating a TV show, House of Cards. It's now into its third season. So to give us a guided tour of the house and its notable features, I recorded an interview with Adrian this week. And just to warn you, I was in one of those office buildings where it sounds like I'm about 3 kilometers away, but Adrian's up really close, which is good because he's got much to tell us about House of Cards. Adrian, thanks for joining us on The Big Picture. Now, mate, I know you're a big fan of House of Cards, but before we get into why you're a big fan of the show, for anyone listening who hasn't actually seen it, give us a bit of a rundown about what House of Cards is about.
Okay, so House of Cards is a US remake of a UK show that came out around 1990. And it basically focuses on Frank and Claire Underwood, who are senatorial incumbents to the presidency, basically. It stars Kevin Spacey as Frank and Robin Wright as Claire. And so the story basically focuses on their kind of rise to the top job.
Yeah, yeah. But there's a lot going on in House of Cards. You've remarkably simplified House of Cards in like 2 sentences there. Well played. But there's a lot happening in the House of Cards.
There is a massive amount of stuff happens in the House of Cards. It's a bit sort of in 5 minutes to sort of truncate it to 3 seasons of what's happened. They have worked their way up through various dirty tricks in the Senate, and they work as a bit of a team. They've been likened in the media to the Macbeth and Lady Macbeth of...
That's a pretty good contrast, isn't it? Because the Underwoods, from the first episode, make it pretty clear to the audience what they're intending to do. And what they're intending to do isn't coming from a good place.
No, it isn't. And there's a bit of a quirk of the show. Like Ferris Bueller before him, Frank Underwood actually talks to camera. So he'll actually tell viewers what he's about to come.
I think you're the first person who's linked Ferris Bueller and Frank Underwood in the same sentence, but keep going.
I'm just putting it out there. So it's something you will have noticed from Ferris Bueller, but Frank actually tells you what he's about to do.
He's speaking directly to the audience.
He speaks directly to the audience, and he talks openly about his kind of withering disdain of his colleagues and how he's going to bring them down and in what form he'll do that.
Yeah, in short, he's going to take down everyone who is in his way to get the top job in America.
That's correct.
In the American political system. So, Adrian, Frank Underwood's not a nice bloke, but there is a lot going on in House of Cards. Gathering all those things up, what do you like about this show? Or what keeps you watching it? You're into the third season. You've seen the first couple of episodes. Yep. Why do you keep going back?
I think I keep going back because I think, like all anti-heroes, we want to see, or villains even for that matter, we want to see some form of redemption. And because the show is called House of Cards, you know that Frank's rise is going to have either a crashing fall or something's going to happen.
But they do a pretty remarkable job across... I've seen the first 2 seasons. They do a really good job of sustaining the... you're right, you're waiting for this fall to happen. And without trying to give too much away, they sustain it very nicely of what you expect is going to happen.
They do, and I think the beauty of the show to some degree is the performances are excellent. Kevin Spacey and Robin Wright are a bit of a force to be reckoned with in the show, figuratively and narratively, basically. So the performances are fascinating, and watching them is compelling because you want to know what's going to happen. It's kind of that, what's the end game? What's going to happen? And already a few episodes into season 3, you wonder where it's going to go. So,
but what do you think about, given so much of House of Cards is about manipulation, and particularly manipulation of truth? So you get everything from manipulated media to manipulated political systems to manipulated relationships on a personal level. What do you reckon about that?
Well, I think the show is really interesting because it demonstrates that people who have power are in control of a lot of the messages we see.
Right,
and
yeah,
they have their own version of truth. To some degree, yes. So they can manipulate that for the masses. That's definitely in evidence in the show.
So and is that truth then, if they're manipulating it?
No, not at all. No. It's their version of truth. And I guess the deceit of the show to some degree is you'll find some truths are harder than others, and some people actually pay more dearly for their truths than others. So there's, I mean, unlike the absolute truth of the gospel, for instance, it seems malleable, and they're able to manipulate it because they are controlling of the media to some degree. So that's what I think is really fascinating about the show. It shows the kind of backroom antics of what's going on, and you wonder how much of that actually goes on in the real White House.
Mm. But as a Christian, it causes you to reflect on the truth of the gospel itself.
Absolutely. And I think the biggest sort of overarching theme in the show is that the truth in the wrong hands can basically be manipulated for personal gain. But I guess in the end, the truth prevails despite that individual manipulation. Because despite what Frank wants to happen, ultimately, I think his truth is ahead of him, which is what may or may not happen to him. And I think that's what makes the show quite exciting.
And actually, if you haven't checked out House of Cards, I really do want to recommend it. That's like one of the brilliant sort of political dramas that are on air. It's amazing how it actually leads you to almost like evil. You know, it's strange. and just for those people who are professionally sort of considering what we've just done there, it's also a learning curve. Never conduct an interview in a bathroom, even if it is the quietest room in the house.
Thanks for giving me that digital recorder, Mark, and telling me how to use it correctly.
Well, I really should have said something like point it towards you. Yes. But you know, that's it. Guys, it gives us a perfect lead into our top five this week. Because
great segue. Top five.
Our top five is political dramas. And this week, we're taking a lead from Adrian Drayton and delving into the Machiavellian world of politics. What are my top political TV and film dramas, you ask?
Yes, I asked that, Mark. What are they?
Well, since I can't start with House of Cards, I'm actually going to go to the show that made me at least want to work at the White House at number five.
Five.
The West Wing. If you haven't seen The West Wing, you've probably missed some of the best writing television has had in the last 10 years. It's a real cult series. It's the show that made everyone who watched it want to be smarter. You know, it's just people walking around, constantly expressing.
And speak even faster than I do.
I know. And in fact, an amazing camera style too. Very fluid in the way it sort of rolls around. So it's almost very few cuts as it goes from scene to scene.
But why is it great as a political drama?
Well, for Australians in particular, The West Wing made us feel as though we could actually hope in good and honourable leaders. That's the weird thing. We don't actually have a tradition of that in Australia, of thinking very highly of our leaders. But Americans do that well, and they actually show it. So basically, we're given a picture of what could actually happen. We could actually have somebody who wasn't just concerned about making us happy, but making us good. Now, that brings me on pretty much to my next choice.
Four.
Primary Colors, 1998 film with John Travolta, Nichols film.
Yeah.
Now, this is the other side of politics. Never ask how a sausage...
The John Travolta side.
If West Wing is the best, you know, of what we could see inside the White House or, you know, a political institution, Primary Colors shows us the other side. You know that saying, never ask how a sausage is made? Well, never look too closely at a political campaign. You know, this particular film shows us a president who has ideals, sure, but also a distressing range of faults. And it's almost like we're choosing, you know, to have the lesser of two evils so that we can actually sort of progress. It's my choice for the wake-up call that we're nowhere as good as we appear on TV.
How realistic is it, or is it quite cartoonish?
I actually think it's very realistic. In fact, it's actually modelled off the Clinton administration and his rise to power. And so it's kind of very interesting to watch. But it's no more interesting. I don't think it's anywhere as interesting as my next choice at number three. Oh, I talked over my own thing.
Oh, come on, man. I know. Don't ruin the sound effects.
Well, it's my lack of professionalism. 13 Days. Okay, is a film that came out in 2000. Kevin Costner, Bruce Greenwood as the Kennedy brothers in the run-up and during the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1962. Now, again, talking to people who might remember, this was a point where our world as we know it...
I don't remember.
...literally came close to ending. You know, it was a point in which we probably came closest to a nuclear holocaust on the planet. Mm. And that, of course, would have changed life as we know it forever. And It is fascinating to look at a program where in which people are trying, politicians are trying to deal with the situation that they just don't understand. It reminds me of that documentary, The Fog of War, that came out in 2003, that just reminds you of how much they don't know. They're trying to put together a big jigsaw puzzle. What do the Russians mean by this? What language is being spoken now? What we can't understand what they mean by moving the ships into this particular area. And so for me, it's a great way to underline just how difficult it is to make good decisions when you're struggling to put the big picture together. If you don't have something defining everything for you, I mean, as a Christian, I've got the meta-narrative of God and what he's done, but if you've got none of that, you're fumbling around in the dark, and that show really brings it out. But nothing like the classic at number two.
Two.
All the President's Men.
Ah, yeah.
Okay, 1976, yep. Classic. Now, I think most people who watch this film now will feel like it drags a little. And that's only because we've become used to a pace of cutting and sort of film duration that is much faster than when this film came out. But basically, it's about the reporters Woodward and Bernstein who uncovered the details of the Watergate scandal. And gosh, all I can say is if you don't know what that is, just Google it. Okay, go look at Wikipedia.
Or watch that movie, which is a really slow, deliberate investigation of the investigation.
And it is in basically a political drama where journalism meets politics. And in the end, journalism, truth, if you like, the representation of truth, destroys a rotten foundation.
And it's a really quite powerful reminder of what journalism once was and possibly could still be. And people are definitely doing it. I'm not trying to say journalism's dead, but that's a great movie of celebrating what campaigning for truth can actually look
like.
We
are going to have to do a top five journalism, you know, at some point, because I've got to say it's upsetting in some degree. We can go, gosh, that's what journalism used to be like. And this is fact, people, so it's really worth watching. But this is not my top one.
One.
I think the best political drama I have seen in the last 10 years, barely in the last 10 years, if you think about this, is The Queen, that came out in 2006. Helen Mirren as Elizabeth II, after the death of Princess Diana, struggling with her reaction to a sequence of events that nobody could have predicted. And really, in essence, showing us the heart of the fact that it's very hard to wear a crown. It's very hard to lead because these are real people sitting behind this. And in the end, what Queen Elizabeth is struggling with is to love her enemy, you know, because Princess Diana made her life hellish. Now, I don't want to get into who you think was the best of the two people. The truth is that they did not get on. They did not work out well together. And when Diana died, all the recriminations came back on the royal family. And yet they were normal people, just trying to cope with someone who had always been difficult for them, had always been hard work for them, or more to the point, had even hated them, you know, in a public way.
So you think the Queen represents what, the ordinary and the extraordinary of political life?
I think you look at it and you go, my goodness, these leaders are normal people. There's this beautiful moment where the Queen has been holding it stolid, and then she's alone for the first time for a little bit of a walk on the moors, and she breaks down, she cries. And you can just understand at that moment, it must be immense to lead. So if there's anything that I learned from a film like that, it is as hard for the great people of this society to say love your enemies as it is for you and me.
Have we shown you how to start a nuclear war yet?
No.
Oh, first thing we do, apparently. Then we take away your passport and spend the rest of the time sending you around the world.
Well, you obviously know my job better than I do.
Yes, well, you are my 10th Prime Minister, Mr. Blair. My first, of course, was Winston Churchill. He sat in your chair in frock coat and top hat. He was kind enough to give a shy young girl like me quite an education.
I can imagine.
With time, one has hopefully added experience to that education and a little wisdom, better enabling us to execute our constitutional responsibility.
Well, if you've been with us for the whole program, you'll know that this week we've devoted our soundtrack segment to great TV comedy shows. And if you haven't, well, more loss to you.
And you'll remember my spectacular failure on the first time round.
Okay, so I've bundled together a selection of unforgettable themes to test Ben's
although
memory.
Some of us did forget.
I just want to now remind you that they are, in fact, unforgettable. Well, anyway, how many of these can you name?
All on my own. No, I know Superman.
Take a little good advice. Try a trip to paradise. It's not hard to find. You got it on your mind. You can't pretend it wouldn't be nice.
Okay, I don't know how many you got. How many do you get, Ben?
Thank you, Mark. I think I'm a bit hazy on number three, but the first one was Arrested Development.
Yep, that's
the second
right.
one was MASH.
That's true.
Fourth one was The Goodies.
Yep.
Fifth was Seinfeld.
Who could miss that? The bass beat. No one's ever going to forget that.
Or as our producer Fernando pointed out, it sounds a lot like the theme song to The Big Picture.
Well, I think
we definitely haven't pirated from Seinfeld. We definitely have not pirated.
And look, just a little kudos. If anybody watches Stop Laughing, This Is Serious, which is launched this week, we had that theme first.
Yeah, that was us.
Yeah.
And the sixth one was the original Odd Couple theme. But the third one, that Superman song, is that Scrubs?
It's Scrubs.
Woo! Six from six. Booyah!
Oh, no. I was
redeemed.
I was thinking you wouldn't actually get that one. Look, I feel that it's touch base for comedy, isn't it? You hear those soundtracks and you think, this is exactly, you know, where I was when I was listening to those jokes, and this is how old I was, and I could see my lounge room and all that sort of stuff. And in fact, the last one was the Odd Couple theme, the original Odd Couple theme, and that's basically bringing us to what your kids are watching this week, because we've had the launch of the reboot of The Odd Couple. The Odd Couple this week is an amazing opportunity to basically look back at a theme that just doesn't seem to change.
Felix was just telling me about the end of his marriage.
Oh, that's fun. What are you doing?
She asked. She's divorced too.
Yeah, 6 months. So, this is my ex-husband, Brandon.
Hmm. I see you like them rugged and handsome.
Turns out, so did Brandon. Do you have any pictures of Ashley?
Do I have pictures? Are you kidding? I'm a photographer. I have an entire slideshow set to the music of Enya.
I can't get over the fact that the canned laughter
is back.
Aha! Look, this is basically what was originally a Neil Simon play, and then several films, including the classic 1968 version starring Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon, and the
Such a great movie.
I know, incredible.
Such a great
movie. But I think even surpassed, to be honest, by the TV show starring Jack Klugman and Tony Randall.
Yes.
You know, and then so now here we are with the new version.
45 years later.
With Matthew Perry as Oscar Madison, previously of Friends, and Thomas Lennon, who's Felix Unger. Very much the same story too. Heartbreaking premise, my wife doesn't love me anymore, I'm going to move in with you, two odd-shaped guys. How did you find it?
Well, I thought the oddest thing about it was that it's back, and someone's doing it, and it seems a harder sell in 2015 than it was in 1970, that two divorcees would be living together, and that's the basic premise of the show. And then I'm intrigued somewhat to see what they may do with this over the long period, as in what can they do with two guys living together who are polar opposites, the Odd Couple, as it suggests. But from what I saw of the first episode and a bit of the second, they didn't seem to be doing much new or different at all with this or the sitcom situation. They're just going back for that largely reactionary comedy. Someone says something, someone else is going to say largely the opposite of that.
It's
cue
like,
the laughter.
It's like watching Taxi or Good Times or something like that, or even The Cosby Show.
Yeah,
it's
but you're harking back to shows from the 70s and 80s where situation comedies, particularly of America, were developed and really blossomed. But as a lot of those themes that you just played in soundtrack section demonstrate, comedy in situation sitcoms have developed significantly in the last 10 to 20 years, everything from Seinfeld to Arrested Development. Why go back in for something like The Odd Couple?
Yeah, I think it's almost like Friends and, if you like, Seinfeld took us away from that. That they actually developed they got out
Friends.
Of that single set. Well, they got us out of that single set sort of approach, which is what, you know, The Odd Couple
is. They
moved
from the apartment to the cafe?
We've never actually even lost The Odd Couple. If you think about it, Two and a Half Men is The Odd Couple,
yeah,
but just
and
in a much more modern
that's
context.
It's been amazingly popular. So it's kind of no wonder that they've actually, as much as I was scratching my head, it sort of makes sense that you bring back The Odd Couple onto screens, given the success of that. I was a little bit disappointed with the comedy itself. It's not just a bit dated, but there's some really quite sexist and uncomfortable stuff in there, particularly jokes about wives.
Yeah, the women, women jokes, and right next to them, the men jokes, is a sort of a sexism which I kind of, sort of a role playing, which I kind of hope that we got past. But in all truth, we haven't. Because who doesn't sit down at a barbecue and the men circle up and the girls circle up? And so to me, even though it sounds like dated comedy, it's kind of funny that we still do that. That we still do this, we play these roles. Oh, you know what men are like. Oh, you know what women are like. In fact, my wife and I actually have a promise with each other that if we ever see each other doing that, we stop each other and say, we're playing a bit of a role here.
But we've put this in the What Your Kids Are Watching section this week. And I'm going to out you on this, Mark. Mark, this is your choice. I'm skeptical about this. Do you actually think the youngsters, the young folk, are going to be lining up to watch The Odd Couple?
I think they're going to be there for the first few weeks. Basically, Channel 10 is going to promo the living daylights out of it, basically because it's one of the biggest cards they've got to play this year. But also because of the hangover of Friends, when I say the young kids, let's be comparative here, I'm thinking of everybody, under 30. Because I think anybody who remembers Friends is going to be dragged in by Matthew Perry. I think that there's going to be that connection, and people will give it a few weeks just to see what happens. But, I mean, if there's anything to say about it, if there's a reason to actually discuss it, I'd say that one of the interesting things about the program is going to be that it's probably going to be watchable as a family. There are a broad range of people are going to be able to watch it, despite the sexism. You know, it's not really going to be that harsh. It's safe American comedy, so you could see it easily becoming a family program. And if there's anything to say about it to your family, I would say that it's basically showing that we're all broken. The weird thing is that even though Oscar and Felix are completely different personalities, yet they're exactly the same. They've got the same problems, the same brokenness inside, the same need, to be accepted, the same need to somehow move past their mistakes. And that, for me, is a unifying factor that's probably worth pointing out to kids. How different are they? Not really that different after all.
So that was What Your Kids Are Watching this week, The Odd Couple. That's on Channel 10. Now, to round off the show this week, we're going to tell you a bit more about what's happening elsewhere this week in cinemas, on TV, DVD, Blu-ray, everything, that kind of stuff.
What's releasing in the cinemas this week? What should I bother? Well, actually, I won't say what should I bother watching. What's actually coming out?
Let me tell you, Mark, from on high. There's a couple of selections this week that are for the kids. There's a few more for young adults, and then there's pretty much only one left for the adults. But the ones for kids, we're in holiday season, so SpongeBob Movie, Sponge Out of Water in 3D is here.
Oh, gosh.
Apparently, it's something about a pirate stealing a formula and SpongeBob has to, jump out of water and go and rescue it in 3D. That's happening. And The Book of Life, which you're going to discuss on on next week's show, so I won't say too much about it now, but it's an animated film that's actually set around the Mexican Day of the Dead, if you can believe it. Mexican Day of the Dead, that's The Book of Life.
Tune in next week for more on that.
That's right, Mark will let us know. Also at cinemas is Furious 7. That's right, the 7th installment of the Fast and Furious movies. We also, on next week's show, are going to talk a lot more about Fast and Furious and just about that entire franchise. But I'll out myself now and say, despite myself, I really quite like the Fast and Furious movies. The action is insane, but all kinds of electrifying. So Furious 7 is at cinemas. I may actually be there watching it.
Tune in for my tirade next week.
And then also for young adults, because that's definitely who's seeing Furious 7, The Duff. Now, The Duff is a movie that The Duff stands for Designated Ugly Fat Friend. That's Duff. And this could be Mean Girls. Possibly. That's definitely what they're trying to pitch for. It's the kind of movie, Mean Girls, Clueless, that kind of movie. Or it possibly might be just like Legally Blonde 3, maybe. Who knows? The Duff is at cinemas. And then finally, on an international note, a movie called Samba is out at Arthouse Cinemas. It's from the makers of a movie called The Untouchables, which was really quite big with discerning audiences around the place a couple of years ago. It's set in France, and it's about an immigrant trying to get a visa, and he's being helped out by an immigration worker who's Charlotte Gainsborough, if you can believe it. Yeah, which I know definitely one person who'll be seeing this, my mother-in-law, who is an immigration agent, will be going along checking this
look
out.
Look at me. I'm all lined up for this. This is great.
You're an immigration agent?
No, I'm into Samba.
Right, yeah. So that's what's happening at cinemas, quite a lot of rounds.
Well, as far as DVD release this week, you've got a lot to look forward to too. So April 1st, Exodus, Gods and Kings is coming out. Did I say a lot to look forward to? Maybe a lot to dodge.
which one is it? Flip-flopping all over the place.
I would say that Exodus, Gods and Kings will have a space in my library for the best destructive plague sequences I've ever seen.
Yeah, that was good.
And I'll skip the rest.
Yeah.
But what is definitely worth the wait, coming out on April 1st too, is HBO's new series, Silicon Valley, has made a DVD. This is just brilliant TV.
Was that like the birth of startups or something?
It's computer nerds and web tycoons in Silicon Valley, which, if you don't know, is the hub of basically internet world in California. And it really is worth watching. It's great fun. Look, there's always language and stuff like this. Be warned. But
it's HBO.
It is also one of those great comedies. April 2nd, Parks and Recreation Season 6 makes it to Blu-ray and DVD. I have been holding back because I am a binger. You know, I like to actually watch. I'll watch, you know, 9 episodes a night sort of thing till it's done. That's fantastic. Also, though, coming out on April 2nd, Cyberbully on the ABC is a fantastic little webcam-based documentary showing what it's like through screen activity for a teenage girl who's targeted by an unseen cyber stalker and the nightmarish scenario that comes forward. So if parents want to actually have a look at what is the potential and why you really should be guarding your kids by guarding the computer, really worth seeing that on the ABC on April 2nd. And on April 5th, Compass is heading off to Jerusalem for Easter in Jerusalem. Now, this is Geraldine Doogue. I have a love-hate relationship with Compass because I think that they are a marvelous compass that often points in the wrong direction. You know, they've got, but they do have some great things. And I think that Geraldine Doogue is a good person to introduce you to Jerusalem. So if you haven't had the chance to go there yourself, I've been there many times just by virtue of the work I do. I think that she's going to have some good insights. I think it's worth seeing. And Easter in Jerusalem is just an incredible affair. So that's worth watching. Coming up in other things that are releasing in this week, you should have a real good look at basically March Eternity that is coming out. I basically want to
Is this a self-promotion?
It is another promotion. Every week you will hear where we put our stuff out for you. You see, basically, we write for a living, and this microphone turns up every now and again, and we tell you what we're writing. So I'm going to now promo one of Ben's articles. If you haven't had a chance to actually look at the March edition of Eternity yet, dig out his article on the enduring appeal of the big con, okay? Because he does a fantastic little look into not only the Will Smith release that has recently come in the form of Focus, but also what we love about con films and maybe what that says about us. So I think it's worth seeing. Also, there's a brilliant feature article from John Anderson, the former deputy PM, who talks to John Sandeman, who's the editor of Eternity, about the need for reconciliation and why we need to change the Constitution to recognise Indigenous Australians. Fascinating article, challenging too. Be prepared to have your worldview rocked. I think that's worth seeing in Eternity.
Yeah. We heard from Adrian Drayton earlier in the show. He was telling us about House of Cards Season 3. Adrian also looks after Insight's website, they're a big supporter of what we do here at The Big Picture. They've got a new website. Go and check it out. They've got great stuff, news and reviews and all kinds of different features. One of the big features on there at the moment, there was news last week about The X-Files coming back, that show from the 90s that was massive, that's coming back for a short-run season. Adrian is a huge fan also of The X-Files, so he wrote 6 reasons why you should believe in The X-Files. Go to Insights and check it out. It gives some really good Christian reflection on why you would delve back into the back catalogue of The X-Files. So that's what's on Insight's website. So that's what's around in everywhere in the world. What's coming up on the show next week, though, Mark, because we're sadly at the end of the program today.
Well, it's going to be something of a bit of an Easter special next week. We've got lots of things. Ben's going to be telling us his top 5 Easter films with a twist, not the sort of Easter films you'd normally expect. We've got the Book of Life review. We've got The Black Sea. If you haven't heard about that, it's a fantastic new boys' own adventure,
excellent,
I guess.
Excellent film.
So there's lots coming up next week, and we hope you can join us for The Big Picture.
I've been Ben McKechnie.
I'm still Mark Hadley.
The Big Picture is a Bible Society Australia production and part of Hope 103.2's family of podcasts and vodcasts.